Windy City Queer Cast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
Windy City Queer Cast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Amy Matheny.
This program is brought to you in part by American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow.
In the third grade, I thought that I was gay, cause I could draw. My uncle was, and I kept my room straight. I told my mom, tears rushing down my face. She's like, Ben, you've loved girls since before pre-K. Trippin'. Yeah, I guess she had a point, didn't she? Bunch of stereotypes all in my head. I remember doing the math, like, yeah, I'm good at Little League. A preconceived idea of what it all meant. But those that like the same sex had the characteristics. The right-wing conservatives think it's a decision. And you can be cured with some treatment and religion. Man-made rewiring of a predisposition playing God. Oh nah, here we go. America the brave still fears what we don't know. And God loves all his children. It's somehow forgotten, but we paraphrase a book written 3,500 years ago.
Bye-bye,
I don't know.
Bye-bye. And I can't change. Bye-bye, even if I tried.
And you're listening to the Windy City Queer Cast, show number 558. I'm Amy Matheny, and whoa. Seriously? Like, what's next? We've had polar vortex, Arctic vortex. Next, we're going to have, like, Antarctic vortex. And then we're going to be out of options. It's going to have to be one of the cold planets. Which one of the cold planets? Aren't they all cold? I don't know. Anyhow, it's flipping cold. And I flew back. I was out in the desert. And people always think the desert is warm. Well, it's warmer than here. It's not that warm in New Mexico, although it's sunshiny. So that's really, really nice. But I definitely was out taking a nice hike yesterday, you know, in a puffy vest and some, you know, tank and a long sleeve shirt and a little hat and you know, getting a sweat by the time I got to the top of my hike. But yeah. Minus something right now, and but luckily luckily I got in to Chicago with lots of flights canceled and a lot of craziness going on. I got back, so I'm happy for that, and now I'm just gonna hunker down, guys, and like I don't know, do stuff around the house, work from home. That's what's going on. School's closed. My mother in Tennessee keeps calling me, telling me to put water on my radiators, drip water out of my faucets, make sure I plug up, you know, the bottoms of my doors with towels, like all the good tips that, you know, a loving mother would tell you to do. But this is some serious, serious cold. So please be careful this week. It is going to warm up to a balmy 20 something, I think, on Wednesday, but it's cold while I'm doing this show for you Monday night. And did everybody catch the Grammys last night? I have to say I have watched only half because I was busy Sunday night for part of the evening, but really, really cool. Macklemore and Ryan Lewis at the 56th Grammy Awards, I think will be one of the things, one of the stories of the night. Not only did they walk away with you know, the Grammys for the rap for the rap awards. They won in three rap categories and beat out many other rap artists, but they were also honored as best new artist. And you know, obviously they've been a huge story for us in the GLBT community with their song Same Love, and really special moment on the Grammys, I thought, when they were performing Same Love with Mary Lambert on stage in her red sequins looking fabulous and just throwing down the song. And then Queen Latifah walks out, which was pretty cool. Sister being a sister without saying she's a sister. And she said she was going to officiate a group wedding event. And there were 33 couples. They were very different couples. There were racial diversity and gender diversity and straight couples and same-sex couples. And 33 couples were married. Who can say they were married at the Grammys? But now those 33 couples can. And then Madonna came out. Looking a little, as my friend Jerry Dye said, like Peggy Lee with her blonde bangs and her cowboy outfit and her cane and her grill, and sang a slowed down version of Open Your Heart from the 1980s. And she didn't sing very well. Let's just be honest about it. She didn't sing very well. She looked a little strange, but it is Madonna, who I think will be known as one of the first artists that really was a major mainstream crossover artist who celebrated and talked about the GLBT community in such an open way. Now, there are other artists, I think, who had a gay following. Of course, we can think of Cher, who came way before Madonna. But I think Madonna really took on the community, even in a vocal way, of saying that the gay community, the community during the time of HIV/AIDS crisis, which was right during the peak of her career, was her community. And so it was kind of cool. It was a really, I thought, cool, emotional event. And if that wasn't queer enough, Kacey Musgraves won for Best Country Album. Same trailer, different park. Now, she's not a lesbian, but she too is blazing trails in the country scene. Her song Follow Your Arrow, which was written by an openly gay songwriter in Nashville, has those lyrics. If you haven't heard it, it's really, I love that song. The little verses, make lots of noise, kiss lots of boys, or kiss lots of girls, if that's something you're into. And I love Kacey Musgraves. So really, really cool that she was there. It was a good night. Another tip to just something that would be GLBT exciting was that Kinky Boots won for the Best Musical Theater Album. And that's awesome because that tips its hat to a really queer story, trans story, and also to Cyndi Lauper. So she's our girl. She's our girl, Cyndi Lauper, always has been. So it was a big Grammy night. I'll have to watch some of the performances I missed, but I did get to see that big wedding ceremony of 33 couples, and what a night, huh? Well, there is a film, a lesbian film, that wasn't made very long ago. It's made in the past 20 years, 15 probably, but it is a classic already, and because it takes place during World War II Germany and is not an American film, it's a German film, Amy and Jaguar has instantly become a lesbian classic film. It's a beautiful movie. I would venture to say it is probably one of my all-time favorite queer movies. Just stunning. Well, there is a new adaptation of this story, which is a true story, based on a set of letters from one of these women to the other woman. And through this was what the film was made from, but also now at Northwestern University, they are premiering a new play based on the story of Amy and Jaguar. And I will be talking with the playwright for Amy and Jaguar up at Northwestern, who is a Northwestern alum and will be on the show with me. So I'm very excited because I love that movie so, so much. I'm interested in learning more about it coming to the stage. And also, what's going on in GLBT news? Lots of stuff going on. We're talking about Russia. You know we are. So, and we're also talking about Utah and Russia, and many, many, many other things. And Robert De Niro in our news. So stay tuned. cozy up somewhere, wrap a blanket around you, put on your cozy warm slippers, and settle in. I hope you're not having to traverse somewhere listening to this Queercast, but if you are, I hope I can keep you warm for the next 45 minutes to an hour. All right, it's going to be a good show.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Week in News.
More than 2,700 calls, emails, and letters flooded Utah Governor Gary Herbert's office after a federal judge said gay couples could marry in the state. Herbert, a Republican, has pledged to defend Utah's same-sex marriage ban after the judge overturned it December 20th. Since then, his office has received about 1,800 phone calls, letters, and emails from same-sex marriage supporters and another 900 calls and letters and emails from opponents. More than 1,000 gay couples married during the 17-day same-sex marriage was legal in Utah before the U.S. Supreme Court halted the weddings on January 6th. Utah has appealed to the 10th U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals.
Openly gay Virginia State Senator Adam Eben, the Democrat from Alexandria, is among a group of lawmakers who has introduced legislation that would repeal the Commonwealth's ban on gay marriage. The Marshall-Newman Amendment, approved in November 2006, defines marriage as a strictly heterosexual union. The survey taken in conjunction with the November 2013 governor's race found that 50% of registered Virginia voters supported same-sex marriage, compared to 43% who did not.
Utah state officials say newly married gay and lesbian couples can jointly file their taxes for 2013. The ruling also pertains to same-sex couples legally married in other states. The announcement came a week after the federal government said it would honor Utah's gay marriages and allow couples to file federal taxes jointly.
Affordable housing for gay senior citizens has opened in Philadelphia. This month's opening of the John C. Anderson Apartments reportedly helped appease supporters who felt gay elders have been marginalized by youth culture, even within LGBT circles. Philadelphia now joins Los Angeles and Minneapolis as the only locations with designated gay-friendly, affordable senior housing, collectively offering about 200 units.
President Obama has named a black lesbian from Illinois to serve on the federal court. Obama nominated Stacey Michelle Yanley for a seat on the U.S. District Court for the Southern District of Illinois. U.S. Senator Dick Durbin recommended Yanley, who will need confirmation from the U.S. Senate before she's seated on the bench.
In Massachusetts, a federal appeals court has upheld a judge's ruling granting a taxpayer-funded gender reassignment operation for a transgender inmate serving a life sentence for murder. Michelle Kosalek, 64, was born male but has received hormone treatments and lives as a woman in an all-male prison. Prison officials had argued there are legitimate safety concerns over protecting her in prison if she has the surgery.
The United Methodist Church has formally charged another clergyman for presiding at the same-sex wedding of his son. Reverend Thomas Ogletree, age 80, will be tried March 10th for violating church law against officiating at gay unions. This past December, Pastor Frank Schaefer of Pennsylvania was defrocked after he officiated at his son's gay wedding.
Lesbian Houston Mayor Anise Parker has married her longtime partner, Kathy Hubbard. They married on their 23rd anniversary in Palm Springs.
Thousands of schools across the country celebrated the 10th anniversary of GLSEN's No Name Calling Week, January 20th through 24th. The annual event has educators emphasizing kindness and compassion as a means to eliminate name calling and bullying of all types.
Six same-sex couples and Equality Florida Institute filed a lawsuit January 21st in Florida State Court in Miami seeking the freedom to marry. The lawsuit argues that Florida's laws barring same-sex couples from marriage violate the United States Constitution by denying them the legal protections and equal dignity that having the freedom to marry provides. The couples are from Miami and the surrounding area. Four of the couples are raising children, and another couple has an adult child and two grandchildren.
In Mississippi, the Starkville City Council passed a resolution supporting diversity in all forms, including sexual orientation. It is the first time any municipality in Mississippi has recognized the dignity of its LGBT residents.
In world news, Uganda President Yoweri Museveni has attacked Parliament for passing the anti-homosexuality bill, saying gays are abnormal but could be saved. Museveni has joined the critics of Speaker Rebecca Kadaga, who was instrumental in forcing the measure through, even though some claimed not enough members of parliament were present to make a quorum. Museveni added that suggested rescuing gays and lesbian people is best done through revitalizing the economy, that is, industrializing and improving the agriculture of Uganda.
Hoping to ease international concern, President Vladimir Putin has vowed no athlete will face discrimination at next month's Winter Olympics. The International Olympic Committee, or the IOC, has not commented on Russia's gay propaganda law, but it has said it has received assurances no gay athlete or tourist will be arrested during the Games, as long as people don't express LGBT-related views to minors.
Virgin CEO and British billionaire Richard Branson will be working with Nigerian government leaders on gay rights. A bill signed into law by President Goodluck Jonathan makes it illegal to have same-sex marriages or even LGBT-related meetings. Branson, who has also spoken out against the Ugandan anti-gay bill that the country's president has yet to sign, hopes to change attitudes for the better in Nigeria.
Almost 5% of all marriages in New Zealand residents were between same-sex couples in the first 4 months after gay marriage became legal. There were 335 same-sex marriages in New Zealand in the 4 months to December 19, 2013, with 178 between women and 157 between men.
In entertainment news, Michelle Hurst, who plays Miss Claudette on the Netflix series Orange is the New Black, recently awoke from a 16-day medically induced coma at a North Carolina hospital. Hurst was injured in a serious car accident before the holiday season that required the coma.
Rosie O'Donnell has joined the hit ABC family series The Fosters for a multi-episode storyline. Her role is Rita Hendricks, the tough love operator of a group home that takes in runaway Callie.
After having great success with the Sound of Music Live, NBC plans to produce Peter Pan, a live remake of Pan from the same producing team of Craig Zaden and Neil Marin, will air December 4th, almost a year to the day after Music, which drew 18.6 million viewers for the live broadcast. Pan has not yet been cast, although the title role will likely be played by a male actor.
The British comedy Vicious, starring Ian McKellen and Derek Jacobi as a gay couple who have been together nearly half a century, will air on Sundays and premiere July 6th on PBS. Meanwhile, Jacobi's drama The Last Tango in Halifax has been ordered for a second season, returning June 29th.
At the Sundance Film Festival, the audience gave a standing ovation to the movie Love is Strange, which centers on a gay couple, played by Alfred Molina and John Lithgow, who marry after 39 years together. In the movie, the couple's bond is challenged when Molina's character is fired from his job teaching music at a Catholic school after the archdiocese learns of his marriage.
And actor Robert De Niro is honoring his late gay father in an HBO documentary. Robert De Niro's father, Robert De Niro Sr., was an abstract expressionist painter, part of the post-World War II art scene that produced such talent as Jackson Pollock. He died in 93 at the age of 71. De Niro has made a documentary about his father called Remembering the Artist, Robert De Niro Sr., that will air on HBO this June.
And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hey, this is Levi Kreis, and you are on the Windy City Queercast.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of January 28th, 2014, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. Hedda Gabler at Writers Theater is hugely compelling and thrillingly intimate, according to the Chicago Tribune. And the Chicago Sun-Times calls Hedda Gabler a lip-smackingly delicious, tabloid-worthy show, awash in sex and power games and self-destruction. Acclaimed director Kimberly Senior leaves his breathtaking cast in a vivid staging of Henrik Ibsen's masterpiece. Now playing at Writers Theater in Glencoe, just minutes from downtown Chicago on the Edens or Metra. For tickets, visit writerstheater.org.
The Theater and Interpretation Center at Northwestern University proudly presents an all-new stage adaptation of Amy and Jaguar, based on the critically acclaimed lesbian film. Playing January 31st through February 9th, get two tickets for the price of one with the special code WINDYCITY. For tickets, visit tic.northwestern.edu. That is tic.northwestern.edu.
Steppenwolf Theater presents Tribes by visionary playwright Nina Raine. the only deaf member of a cheerfully combative family, searches to be heard in this stimulating play the Wall Street Journal called the most daring and funniest new play in recent years. Tickets start at just $20. Visit steppenwolf.org. Tribes is playing now through February 9th.
Tap dance your way to the Paramount Theater in Aurora for the hit Broadway production of 42nd Street. Don't miss classic hits We're in the Money, Lullaby of Broadway, and of course, 42nd Street. Directed by Rachel Rockwell and playing now through February 9th at the Paramount in Aurora. For tickets to 42nd Street, visit ParamountAurora.com. That's ParamountAurora.com.
Pride Films and Plays presents what many consider to be the first gay play, Lillian Hellman's classic tale of love and lies, The Children's Hour. Written in 1934, it is as timely today as it was when written. See The Children's Hour through February 9th at Collaboration, 1579 North Milwaukee Avenue. For tickets, visit brownpapertickets.com. Don't miss this exciting new production from Pride Films and Plays. And for more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
Hi there, this is Deb Pierce reminding you it's okay. Go ahead. You're not alone. Post a comment.
If you save yourself from marriage, you're a bore. If you don't save yourself from marriage, you're a horrible person. If you won't have a drink, then you're a prude. But they'll call you a drunk as soon as you down the first one. If you can't lose the weight, then
Jaguar is classic storytelling, a gripping drama of historical vibrancy, and surrounding a very human love story between the forbidden love of two women. The film has become a lesbian classic already, and now the story will find its moment on the stage in Lillian Groag's adapted production for the stage at Northwestern University. And I'm thrilled to have Lillian with me here on the Queercast. Hey, Lillian, how are you?
Good, thank you.
You're going to be coming to Chicago soon, so bundle up from your days being here before.
Yes, I'm coming next week from this weekend.
Yeah, so it's
opening.
Fantastic. So, Lillian, this is based on a true story, right? What is the source material for the story of Amy and Jaguar?
Yes, well, there have been many, many interviews and stories. I was just, it was called to my attention by the original commissioners of this, that it was a book of interviews. But as you can imagine, they've been interviewed. There were survivors. Certainly Lily was a survivor, and some of her, Felice's friends were, survived too. And they were interviewed many times by many people. This book is, it collects some of the interviews or the ones that this particular woman did. A woman called Erica Fisher, who did her own book of interviews. But I believe that the people that did the film did their own interviews with Lily, who was still alive. Mm-hmm. And I think that's 1995. Mm-hmm. And you know, and then this, it was all pretty popular for a while.
Yeah.
I think two things. One thing was really interesting for me was that I found out about the U-boats. As they call them in the play, in a U-boat, were the Jews in Berlin and Austria, who I guess couldn't get out, waited too long or couldn't get out or didn't manage to, but they could pass, so that they lived until the end of the war on false IDs and whoever would, you know, shelter them, but not for too long because you didn't want the neighbors to wonder who that person was, you know.
Yeah. Let's back up just a little bit in case people have not seen the film and they don't know what Amy and Jaguar is about. What is the story?
The story is about a young Jewish girl, 20, I think between 19 or 20, by the time, with a group of friends, you know, high, what do we call this? upper middle class girl with daughters, all of them in a little group of daughters of professionals and university girls. Most of them lesbians, all of them lesbians actually, most of them Jewish, not all, and who got stuck in Berlin by about 1941. They couldn't get out. And they, in their search of people who would shelter them, who would take them in, so that they could, and they passed. They worked out. They worked in public places and newspapers. Actually, Felicia, two of them, Felicia being one of them, worked in a National Zeitung, which was a Nazi paper, a Nazi rag. They called it, passing for, you know, quote unquote, Aryan. And she meets the wife, the very Aryan wife of a Wehrmacht soldier, and they fall in love, and she lives with her for about 2 years until she gets somebody turns them in. Nobody knows to this day. Could have been somebody from upstairs in an apartment house. And it was, you know, the love of one of those great love affairs.
Right.
I hesitate to say love affair, see, without qualifications, because what the play is really like is about is about the nature of love. What does love consist of? You know, is there some self-serving aspect of love? I think there is everywhere, you know. The having children, you have children because they will take care of you, among many things. You know, you there's a sort of an interdependence that is not as as sentimental as we imagine them. And certainly for Europeans, it's a little more acerbic and astringent. There's a more astringent idea of love than we have in America. And so they fall in love. They live together. Somebody blows a whistle on them, and Felisa, the young Jewish girl, is arrested and taken to Theresienstadt. As which this is near the end of the war, so they were beginning to empty the camp. It was not a death camp, but it was a transitional camp into the death camps. But not everybody went there, and Lily, the wife, or by this time the ex-wife of the Wehrmacht officer, she also, by the way, had four little boys. She actually went to Theresienstadt, made a scene in the camp. You could very easily go in and out of it because it was a shell camp. Made a terrible scene in there out of despair and love and trying to save her lover, and actually caused her deportation to the east, to Auschwitz, and she died, and Felicia died. So, you know, the this is a short, you know, version of the story.
Sure. I mean, it's so dramatic. I mean, there is so much drama of what's going on in, you know, in Berlin, what's going on at this time of the war, what's going on just sexually and discovery. And I mean, obviously, a married woman with four children finding herself attracted and in love with another woman, the drama between, you know, Jewish and Gentile. I mean, there's so chock full. Why did you think, I want to see this as a play? Were you familiar with the film, or how did you get introduced to this and then become a play for you?
I was commissioned by somebody who wanted it written, company first, who wanted it written. I was familiar with the film, and then I forgot about it. And then somebody commissioned me. Somebody said, "We think you're." Somebody read my work and said, "We think you understand Europe, and you understand that part of Europe. You should be the person to write it." And I said, "Are you sure you don't want a gay woman to write this? Because you know, people get very, very touchy about appropriation of experiences and stuff like that." And they said, "No, we just think writing is a love story. It's not necessarily, you know, just a lesbian story." And come to find out, in the middle of all this, and after a couple of workshops at ACT, that gay women, lesbians, say they're quite upset because there's very few, if any, theater written about lesbian women.
Sure.
There's any number of plays about gay men, any number. I mean,
right.
You can count them by the fistfuls every year, and nothing about gay women. And there are some gay playwrights out there. My agent has told me she represents a few, and they don't get produced.
Yeah.
And I had no idea. You know, I didn't know that. So I thought that's another reason. That was not the original reason that these people commissioned me to write it. But I thought this is a classic, true lesbian story that should be told, and people should start being able to get comfortable by watching, female lesbian stories as well as gay men stories.
Right. Well, and our stories are very universal. I mean, you know, when the film came out, you know, it's as much a movie about the Holocaust. It's as much a movie about so many different topics than it is about anything about sexuality.
Yeah. Oh, sure.
And I remember seeing Adrian Lyne, the film director, on Charlie Rose years ago when the movie Unfaithful came out with Diane Lane. And there were some very... at the time, you know, well-discussed sex scenes that she had in that film. She was nominated for an Oscar and Golden Globe, and being this vulnerable woman having, you know, this affair. And Adrian Lyne said on Charlie Rose, he said, you know, I shot the first sex scene that she had in that film frame for frame based on this foreign lesbian film I had seen, Amy and Jaguar. And I thought, how interesting.
Ah!
Like, he is like the most machismo, like, you know, guy from, you know, from Fatal Attraction and Unfaithful and all these movies. And that, you know, that this movie had a universality to it, even in its sexuality.
Exactly.
That he was moved by it. So how do you explore that sexuality on stage? And also, as you reference, you know, the true story, age appropriate, is about very young women, at a particular time, at least in the Jewish character, Felice, her story. I don't know what the difference in age with her and Lily was, but...
13, she was much older. Lily was 33. So she's about 13 years older.
But very interesting to be exploring this in a university setting where it's age appropriate, you know,
for these
young women. Talk to me a little bit about how you negotiate and explore what's important to heighten about the sexuality of these women at that time in their lives. I mean, a woman with four children, her husband's off at war. He doesn't sound like he's the nicest guy.
No. When he was, I hope, in the play. We don't know much about him, really, but he left some letters.
Yes.
He just wasn't the sharpest knife in the drawer, you know.
Yeah.
But I tend to believe that the great majority of people who follow a movement like that in Italy as well, with Mussolini, in Argentina with Perón, and, you know, where I'm from, and you know, in that people like that can't possibly be very bright.
Right.
They can't. They can't believe what they hear. They cannot possibly. The reason that the movement, certainly the Nazi movement, was so successful was it gave a misguided hope to people who, for the future and for a future, you know, life and employment, people who really wouldn't have been able to, in fact, they would have stayed pretty much on the lower, you know, level of employment.
Sure.
There are people who were not educated. There are people who were, somebody called it, I remember my father was a Viennese Jew, and my dad called it a movement of doormen and street cleaners, and of course that was of his class and of his time, but that really it was a movement that made the little feel big.
Yes, of
and,
course.
You know, and of course, all of a sudden you have it's like the tremendous power that people who make you wait in line at the DMV have. All of a sudden, they never have any power in their lives. Their lives are just miserable. But if they can make you wait in line, or sometimes at the post office, you find there's some people that they, and you totally understand the power of the powerless and how they exert it.
Mm-hmm.
And So there's that. What it was interesting about love and sexuality, I tend to think I am not how can I say this? I did try to explain to all my friends. I don't see, let me start from me. I don't see sex as a spectator sport. Mm-hmm. So whenever there's a sexual scene in movies, I take a nap. Because unless it's very well shot, mm-hmm. and unless there's something else going on, it's a pretty predictable
sure.
act. You know, there are only so many times and so many ways, and those other ways you can show in film. So I think it's a biological act. Mm-hmm. I've always had an aversion to the word horny. Mm-hmm. I don't understand that. I can understand wanting somebody specific.
Sure.
But to run about in the world in estrus, in permanent mm-hmm. estrus, is to me a kind of weird and, mm-hmm. well, not weird, but let's say repulsive. So I think that you can want specific people, and the sexual attraction is enormous, but not in a general washout way. I think foreigners tend to think that Americans are oversexed, so that they just spend so much time thinking. There isn't a TV program. There isn't a fairy tale that is told. That the other night I was watching The Snow Queen, and the Hans Christian Andersen, for
mm-hmm.
God's sake.
Mm-hmm.
It's about two little kids, you know, a little
right.
girl, a little boy. They're little, tiny little kids playing, and the Snow Queen steals a little boy. Well, right. in the movie version, they're teenagers, and they're already having sex.
Yeah.
And they're in love. So it's like, we just don't leave the thing alone.
Right. But in this story, there is an element of repression, and there is an element
absolutely.
Of discovery, so it actually is essential to...
Oh yeah. So then you think
where it's useful to have that be a functioning
right.
story thread.
So when the only time that so this has led me to write a couple of plays about love and about the nature of love.
Mm-hmm.
What is this thing that
yes.
people are so fascinated with? And in this case, I think that the discovery of a woman like Lily, I mean, the Felice, of course, she's young. She's 20, you know, when it starts, 1920. She's so new to the world that everything, and she is an educated girl, or a girl, and she's been to university. She's belongs to a class that is much more comfortable with sexual differences. But Lily comes from, you know, basically a working class background who... had no idea that her natural tendencies would have been to fall in love or to want another woman as
right.
opposed to a man. And she had
right.
no idea because she was, her upbringing just made that impossible. And she has this little speech about when she says, you know, I had no idea why I was so sad all the time. You know, and that I don't know why I had so many girlfriends and I liked them so much. And I didn't know what that feeling was. Now, I tend to think that we're all pansexual. I
right.
think I've never been attracted by a woman, but I'm not saying that I couldn't be tomorrow.
Yes.
You know, I think everybody's pansexual. I think I remember finding a dog once really sexy in a movie. I saw a little movie, a Disney movie called The Adventures of Natty Gann, and there was this half wolf, half dog. That I'm telling you, the first time you saw him when he's protecting the little girl from the bad guys, I thought, oh my God, he looks like Clark Gable. He's so cute. He's cute. So it's not that, but I think that there are people certainly that are born with that gene and they're whatever it is. That tendency, and when you have not known that all your life and you discover it suddenly, which is what happens to Lily when she meets Felice, who is completely overtly attracted to her and sees no problem in making a move towards her, I think that's interesting.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I deal with it. For me, it's just two people falling in love, you know. It's just, and I even have Lily saying right before they go to bed together for the first time, saying, I don't think I'll know what to do.
Right.
See? And then so Felice says, oh, don't worry about it, I'll show you. But
yeah.
that it's so, in that sense, so that is very interesting to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the awakening of sexuality and
mm-hmm.
for Lily, the right sexuality,
mm-hmm.
it must have been overwhelming. And that's why she went so if you want to say, like some people say, in a relationship of love, there's a lover and the lovee.
Mm-hmm.
If that certainly is a, you know, there's always one that loves more than the other, if you want to be really simplistic, that Lily was so passionately in love with her,
mm-hmm.
that therefore the tremendous action, the incredible thing that nobody would think of doing, to go to take a train to Theresienstadt,
mm-hmm.
and walk right into the camp,
mm-hmm.
and go to the camp's officer and mm-hmm. make a terrible scene.
Mm-hmm.
It's because she was desperate. She was mm-hmm. desperate.
It's interesting, right? That release that comes. I mean, I'm just thinking of the times and the overarching theme of like a repressed nation, a stifled nation, a nation, as you said, of I don't know what your language was. I can't remember right now, but just like of sheep, you know, of people who don't think, don't express, don't feel, just follow. And
right.
for somebody to have an awakening of any kind, you know, to have an awakening, to have expression, to have something that feels boundless and without rigidity. You know, it's there's so much in that, right? That it's a dangerous thing, and it's that kind of freedom is liberating and dangerous, and as you said, obviously it could be messy and had dire consequences. In this story,
it's extraordinary that she kills the thing she loves.
Yeah,
with too much love, mind you. Would she have? Do we know for sure that she would have Felice would have made it out of Theresienstadt?
Sure.
They were about to come out, and a lot of people made it out.
Yeah.
And a lot of people, my father had a lot of relatives who made it out,
mm-hmm.
who were there and made it out of Theresienstadt,
mm-hmm.
who were never transported. So this could could have happened.
Yeah.
It also made her, there's a thing too, that kind of passion, if you will, that erotic, romantic passion can make you stupid.
Yeah.
Can make you not think, can make you not watch for danger.
Yeah.
Especially in a very dangerous situation.
Sure.
I also, there's also a theory that I totally agree with, that I think that these kinds of passionate affairs tend to happen more often in extreme situations
yes.
where life and death is not very concrete. The cross
yes.
is very quick, and that if you're in a sinking ship,
yes.
you can tend to, you know,
yeah.
that your entire emotional nervous system
yeah.
is so exacerbated that
mm-hmm.
things tend to happen more in that case than in, you know, in the everyday lives that we all lead.
Yeah.
I think it's very difficult to work in an insurance office and
yeah, yeah.
develop, you know, then Romeo and Juliet wouldn't happen there.
That's right. It's not the right sandbox to write a great drama or a great play from either if we're, you know, maybe in an insurance company. So, I mean,
this makes for
great drama. And even though, you know, I know there's this thing of like, oh, you know, these, you know, when people make gay movies or they make gay plays, you know, somebody has to die or they both have to die or whatever, you know, and the fact of the
yeah.
matter is this was a time when lots of people died and it didn't have anything to do with being gay or being straight.
Oh,
you know?
Yeah.
But I will say that, you know, my takeaway from what I have known of this story is so beautiful, and it doesn't leave, you know, this story doesn't leave me feeling hopeless and horrified and dejected, you know, as a
yeah.
lesbian, you know, I feel very inspired and I feel the power and passion that and healing and freedom that can come from truth and love. And,
right.
and it's really a beautiful, beautiful love story. And I know you must be so excited as a Northwestern alum to be coming back to Northwestern
yeah.
to have an appearance here. And you're going to be joining the cast for a post-show discussion, as you said, opening weekend, January 31st and
yeah.
February 2nd. And just another kind of homegrown aspect of this is that it is being directed by the Milwaukee Rep, former artistic director,
yes.
Joseph Hanready, which is fantastic. And what an amazing
yeah.
opportunity for these young actors up at Northwestern.
They will work with one of the great directors in America. He's
yeah.
one of the great great directors in America. I tell you, when he's been, because he ran the Milwaukee Rep for so long, he couldn't leave, you know.
Yes.
So we're not aware that the man is a genius. We just need to bring, this man needs to be known by everybody. I've seen, because I've worked at Milwaukee Rep. They produced another play of mine. Mm-hmm. I directed another play there. I mean, I've been there a lot, and I've seen a lot of his work.
Yeah.
And I have never, ever, ever seen a bad show there, directed by him. He's amazing.
Well,
he
you must Anna be Karenina thrilled. What a wonderful thing to have him directing your work. It's true, as you said. Yeah. I was reading your bio, and it's like, you know, you started out as an actor and director, and now playwright, adapter, and that's a gift in a playwright to have somebody who really has a facility for those different languages. You know, in crafting a play, I think. And I love working with playwright actors or with their material, because you get a great sense of character, and especially if they are a director as well, they get a great sense of what needs to happen in the story to make it riveting and connect with the audience. Well, I hope audiences will come out and see this amazing Chicago premiere, playwright Lillian Croag's production at the Theater and Interpretation Center of Northwestern. Amy and Jaguar is playing January 31st through February 9th at the Josephine Lewis Theater. That's 20 Arts Circle Drive, right there on the Evanston campus of Northwestern University. We have their link in our show notes with all the information, details on parking and tickets. You can buy your tickets and the story and the cast and all of that. But if you want to go there yourself, you can visit tic.northwestern.edu. That's tic.northwestern.edu. And once again, Lillian will be there talking more about the play and the story January 31st and February 2nd after the show. And what I've come to know is that Northwestern is just presents world-class new work. It is a great, wonderful, fertile ground on which new musicals and new plays are developed, with extraordinary students who go on to be in plays at the top theater companies around the United States on television and in film pretty much immediately after graduation. So this is world-class theater in a university setting that we are so lucky to have here in Chicago. Lillian, break legs. I hope you just enjoy sitting in the audience and watching the story unfold.
Amy.
And we will send lots of the gay and lesbian community up to join the discussion with you on January 31st and February 2nd.
Will you be there, Amy?
I am going to try my best. I penciled
it
great. Into my calendar, so I hope to be there.
Okay, wonderful. Thank you so much.
Got something to say? Call us today, 312-21-BE-GAY. Well, everybody, stay warm. I am sending you warm, loving thoughts. Thank you for listening. And next week, Scott Duff is going to be here talking about his new venture with Out Chicago. It's a Sunday radio show, all things queer and all things Scaduff. So Scott Duff on the show. Have a good week, everyone. Please stay warm and please stay safe.
She keeps me warm.
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.